nominate a member who will be the acting chairperson for the meeting today. And then if there are two members elected, and then we are going to vote the member with the most vote, and then will be the chairperson. If there's one nomination, that person becomes the acting chairperson for the meeting today. So I'm going to request members to nominate Mayor Raputi.
Yeah. Good morning. Stand here to nominate the Honorable Donald Gumede. Thank you.
Mr. Gumede has been nominated to be the acting chairperson. Any seconder? Mekenya?
Good morning, everybody. I'm seconding the name of the Honorable Gumede.
Mr. Gumede has been seconded as an acting chairperson. Any other nomination? No other nomination. So, Mr. Gumede, can you please come and take the chair, please?
Honorable members, honorable minister, esteemed ladies and gentlemen, good morning. That I am Donald Gumede does not mean that I inherited the name of Donald Trump. We are not related. So it has got no bearing on that. And let us look at the agenda from item number 2, opening and welcome. We would like to welcome the following from the department. That is Minister Honorable Malusi Gigaba, our esteemed DJ, Mr. Mkhuseli Apleni, DG, not DJ. Looks like he almost made it. Then we have the esteemed Mr. Thulani Mavuso, the Deputy DG, Infrastructure Planning and Support. Then we have Advocate CAT Sibele Major, Acting Chief Director Legal Service, the distinguished lady, the distinguished advocate. Then distinguished Mr. Muzinjoko, Director Parliamentary and Cabinet Support. Then distinguished, is it Mr. or Dr. Samuel Mandiwana, PMO? Okay, so then the distinguished Mr. Richard Kakani. Okay, he's not distinguishable. So let us go then, and then from Parliament we have Ms. Daksha Kasang, just near to me. And then the distinguished Nosiviwe Siviwe Njigela, advocate in the Siviwe Njigela. Okay. So, and then we have an apology from Ms. S.J. Nkomo. Are there any other apologies? Honorable Minister.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, honorable members and colleagues. The Deputy Minister is not well. She hasn't been well for some time, but she got fever yesterday night, so she has sent an apology.
Oh, thank you, Honorable Minister. So after apology, then we get to point, apologies, then we get to point number four, that is briefing by the Minister of Home Affairs and the Director General on reasons why the Department of Home Affairs delayed to inform the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs to initiate a committee bill on immigration and the timelines on what the department has done since the court order. So the department stands accused and the accounting officer has to account. The distinguished DJ, please.
Morning, Chairperson and the members. Chairperson, my understanding was that this matter was brought to the attention of the committee. But you will recall that there was a time which I was not around in the department. But I think maybe the secretariat can help me on that, whether the matter was discussed or not. But further to that, on the date, when I think I came back in the department, either on the 3rd of November, 25th, but on the 7th of November, I was in front of this committee, and I presented the report on this matter. It was included in the report of the litigation. So, in my view, that the committee is aware of the issue. It's in the report which we presented. I won't say what page number was in that report, but I'm sure the members will recall that. So, Chairperson, that's what it has happened. As I'm saying, maybe if I can, whether I would be directed if I get from the secretariat whether the matter was not, but then I can take it from there to say why and now we wrote the letter, because the decision, remember there's two ways we just dealt with this matter, was for the department to do the normal amendment, or it would have been a committee bill. Once enough that decision was taken, it was now in the hands of the parliament.
Thank you very much, DG. I'd like to check as to whether our distinguished secretary has it on record or not.
For the meeting of the 7th of November, I did not check on those minutes, but for this year, on the 13th of March, the department appeared before the committee. We have circulated the minutes where it was also reported that no, the committee is going to do a committee bill. So the minutes have been circulated. The only thing is that the minutes were not adopted, but have been circulated to all members today, that the committee agreed to do a committee bill on those minutes of the 13th of March 2018.
Honorable Hussein.
Chairperson, if I recall correctly, the real issue that I raised when we met on this matter the last time was not so much about whether or not it was brought to our attention. The issue I raised was, what did the department do to give effect to the decision of the Constitutional Court immediately after receiving that order? Because that letter that was placed before us, where there was the request, the formal request for a committee bill to be initiated, that was a very recent letter. But the judgment, if I'm not mistaken, was June of last year. And then we get the letter to initiate the process only now. So the question was not about why you didn't bring it to our attention. The question was, what were you doing for 1 year to initiate this process, and why did we have to wait for so long, bearing in mind that Parliament has already got such a short space of time, and none of us thought that we would even meet the deadline of the Constitutional Court that gave us 24 months to do the thing. So that was the real issue, not about bringing it to our attention. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Hussein, for the clarity. Honourable Chauke.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I don't know that, we still have to get into this, my hearing of how things have happened and the absence of the DG at some point and the new minister. The argument, obviously, last meeting was that we received a letter that instructed the committee. And in the meeting of that committee, none of the members, in fact, raised any issue that, in fact, this matter has served before the committee before. Now, what you need to do, therefore, Chair, rather than getting into the further details and questions, what you need to do is to look at the timeline that we still have as Parliament. If we were to take the route of having a committee bill and the schedule of Parliament, will we be able, to process that bill and pass it in time? And again, we'll have to deal with the detail of those amendments because where we are sitting, I'm not sure that the members have gone through that particular detail of what is it that must be amended and how voluminous is that work. Because the committee may want to take the responsibility to amend the bill, then we then find that the committee will not in fact be able, based on the work that's supposed to be done. Maybe it's a small amendment. If it's a small amendment, again, it means that we'll have to work together with the department to determine that. And therefore, maybe we may have to agree that the committee can do it, but we'll have to get the legal advice of Parliament to go on board. We'll have to look at the program of Parliament. Once we have satisfied with the Chief Whip's forum again, once everybody is satisfied that the committee can take this responsibility, then the committee can do it. If the department says, look, we thought the committee will do it, but in the absence of the work that has been done by the committee, therefore the department can take that responsibility, because at the end of the day, that bill will still have to come to Parliament. It will still have to come and serve before this committee. The normal requirement, you will then have your hearing. Any amendment, obviously, will require you to go through the hearings. You may want to have public hearings for people to comment and all of that. But what we must make sure is that we must be able to meet the court order. So we can open that discussion. I don't have a problem, Chair. We can open that discussion and with the explanation that has been given by the DG that at some point he was, and we're all aware, at some point he was, he was at court and he's back. The minister was somewhere else. So I think all of us must work towards making sure that we abide by that court order. So we can engage around those issues here. But generally the issue is that it cannot be that the committee gets instructed to amend the bill. It does not work like that. And I would understand that the letter that the minister wrote, he wrote it on the basis of information that was given to him, that the committee said it will amend the bill. And we're very hard in fact in that meeting to say we cannot be instructed by anyone to amend the bill, because firstly it becomes the responsibility of the department to start the process. So maybe we can then look at the work that needs to be amended, and then we can then agree as a committee as to how do we move forward. Thanks.
Honourable Mkhalipi, but I think before Honourable Mkhalipi, I'd like the legal advisor of Parliament to assist if they know anything about this and what they know.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members.
as I presented in the last meeting, I mean, should this committee proceed with the committee bill, then the first step in the process would be for this committee to seek the permission of the House by tabling a memorandum in the House to actually proceed with the committee bill. Once permission is given, then the committee would need to put a draft together, obviously in consultation with the department. From this point, I do not see it to be a very huge amendment because the court judgment has concentrated only on those two sections, but there were certain remarks made in the judgment concerning the whole of Section 34 and not just those two subsections. So the department and I, who would be responsible for the drafting, should it go ahead as a committee bill, would need to really just examine that to put a draft before this committee to deliberate on. Once we have a draft put together, in terms of the rules, we would then have to publish that for at least 3 weeks. But the practice in Parliament has been to publish a bill for 4 weeks to get public comment. And then once public comment is received, this committee would then need to decide whether you want to hold public hearings, all depending on the type of comments that we get and how complex they are. And then, you know, when you consider those comments, you may adjust the bill, and then the bill gets introduced into Parliament, and that then becomes its second reading. So in other words, on introduction, it won't come back to the committee. It will immediately go from the House to the NCLP. I'm not sure what this committee's program looks like, but in preliminary discussions with the Secretariat, I was proposing that should it be a committee bill, that the committee at least aim to get a draft together before you rise for recess. So we must at least, you know, confirm a draft for publication by the 15th of June, so that while Parliament is in recess, we can publish the bill in order to gain comment, and then when you return after recess, we'll be able to consider the comments and the submissions that are received. But I'm not sure what the committee's program looks like. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Mkhalipi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, especially after the clarification from the lawyer there. Because the Parliament has a concern regarding all bills that are in front of Parliament. It has been discussed on the Programming Committee. We are behind. As a result, we took a decision to say that during the recess that starts on the 18th of June until August 18th, those portfolio committees who have bills in front of them, they must work during the recess. So the discussion was provoked by the letter that was signed by the minister, as Honorable Chauke is saying, in this committee. And then we were in the dark. We didn't know if there is any progress or not on the side of the department on how to move forward regarding this act or this amendment act. So now what we need to do, we need to be clarified if there is any work that the department is prepared for us, and we must also, as she is explaining, as a committee, to agree how many days will be needed as a committee to make sure that we also have our work to be done, because we don't have time. So June until August, we won't be here, but the work must be done, because it also has been taken as a decision in the Programming Committee, so therefore it's a decision of Parliament. So that's what we need to do.
Thank you, Honourable Mkhalipi. Honourable GPG.
No, thanks, Chair. As we said, no, Chair, there's a lot which has been done. I mean, we have complied with the Constitutional Court that by the 60 days we have to report to the Constitutional Court what have we done with the implementation. So that has been implemented, irrespective that is not yet amended. It has been implemented. Then now the issue, now the drafting has already been done. We've been working behind with the bill itself, CAT and that. So that's why when he was presenting last week, though I was not here, but he was presenting what needs to be done. So what is needed now is to follow what she has recommended, that is to prepare whatever must come to Parliament and all that. That's all what is left.
No, brother, the point of this, we have to just to agree on the principle. If we take that responsibility as a committee, that's what I then said, if we take it, then we'll have to follow this parliamentary process, right? So that's what we want to hear now. If the committee agrees with that, if there's a draft that has been prepared already, I'm not sure what's happening, which will then speed up the process. I think between, if Parliament takes the ownership of this work to be done by Parliament now, you'll then have to work together with the legal advisor of the department and give us a draft. Then we'll do the necessary work, which is the internal process that must be followed. If that is what we're agreeing upon, then I'm fine with that process. You know, as long as we then build this relationship between ourselves and the department, we take that responsibility as it has been agreed by Parliament. But the issue of yours will be now to do what we must then do, which will guide us, in fact, after we have done that. And I think from that level, Chair, it's fine. No one has given us a brief. I hear the DG saying that DFD has to give us a brief. Not give us a brief. You're not refused. Give us a brief.
Yeah.
Don't speak when I'm speaking and say we are refused. We are never refused by anyone, right? Such matters, DG, are matters that are led by accounting officers' authority. In the absence of the minister, the DG obviously will then make sure that his presence is in the meeting to guide the meeting and the processing as the accounting office. The legal services, yes, it's correct, maybe he was there, but obviously he was not given permission to speak. And it's for you to have dealt with it there, not here, to report to your boss that you're not given a permission, unless for the first time you're meeting him today here. So on that basis, Chair, we'll then take that responsibility, meaning that we'll then have to follow all the necessary processes that must be followed. And the draft can then be prepared, and then the committee can do it. I think the responsibility of members is to make laws, and I think members are not scared to make a law, to amend the law. That bill, the act as it stands now, is the act of Parliament. The members are custodian of that act. So I think the members, if feel strongly, then we can do it in the process. But we have to make it a point that, Chair, next time it must not happen like this, when the committee just jump and say, we'll make the bill. It starts with the department that has capacity to process the issues. It comes as a draft. That's how it must be done. You know, this thing of wanting to do the work of the accounting officers at the go is not correct. That's what creates a confusion that you are sitting with here. But based on the now mutual, you know, arrangement and relationship that we are building with the department, the committee will then have to take this process. But again, we have to be guided by the chief whips. And I think, Honorable Member, the point that was raised in there, Mkhalipi, was that there's this issue of legislation that is before the committee. We may take this decision now, but we still have to consult with the chief whips so that this committee is given that permission again. Because the chief whips can come back and say, no, we don't have that day, what's called time, for committees to do the following, you know. So in principle, I think we can agree, meaning that if it's declined, then the department will have to be informed in time then to do their own process and bring the draft to the committee. I'm fine with that.
Honorable Mkhalipi.
Yes. Yes, Chair. I think the way forward now is to align our program, because we have a program as a committee. I even phoned the secretary of the committee to say that he must send that program to us, because I foresee that we need to amend the program as a committee, because we have to deal with this amendment. So now we are in the dark as a committee. As I'm saying that the fact of the matter is that we are going on recess in June, and it means that you have to, that program must be amended again and must come to the committee in order for us to agree that it's okay. During the recess, this committee is going to proceed with this amendment. That's why we said we need a department and the minister to come in front of this portfolio committee last week to clarify some of these things. Because we are in the dark, we don't know what needs to be done now in terms of the amendment, and we don't want to be seen as a portfolio committee who does not respect the Constitutional Court, because there's a Constitutional Court that says that this Section 34.1B was declared inconsistent with the Constitution of South Africa. So that needs to happen, Jim. Otherwise, we are fine.
Okay. In fact, thank you very much for a very significant contribution, Honorable Mkhalipi. And as you know, we are in the process last week the parliament made a presentation. There was clarification of different aspects on the bill, and then we then had this uncertainty, but our wise parliament decided to continue preparing for both eventualities. That is, if we do not, then they do not. If we do, then they prepared a submission. But now this submission is landing in front of the committee today, right now. So I think the parliament has got to talk to the submission so that we all understand what at least this submission is about. And then if we adopt this submission, then it will be the bill will be tabled before parliament, and parliament will consider it and most probably adopt it. After adoption, then they'll continue with processing the law. Honorable Hussein.
Chair, thank you very much. I'm not opposed to the proposal that you put, but may I just remind you that when we met last week to consider this, there were other issues that we raised that the department was not here to be able to respond to, nor was the minister or the DG. And if you recall, Chair, there was the view that was expressed by myself and I think possibly others, that the judgment itself was an embarrassment to the department and to our government. The fact that we were detaining people without trial for several years, and that the minister himself should have in the least made a statement on the matter. And so I want to, through you, Chair, invite the minister to make a statement on that. I think that this judgment itself is regrettable, that the manner in which we have been operating for a number of years, detaining people without trial, that the Constitutional Court had to make such a ruling against the department. That's the first thing. The second thing, Chair, is the issue around the cost of all of these litigations. And I wonder whether the DG will be able to respond and provide us with at least some indication of what was the total cost on this whole saga. I know it went to the High Court, it was appealed and eventually got to the Constitutional Court, and all along the way we've been losing along the way, and I'm sure it costed us a fortune. So I'd like to hear from the DG what the cost implication of this whole thing has been. Then finally, Chair, you will recall, and I know that the DG has responded very briefly to say that they've complied with the Clause 5 of the judgment of the Constitutional Court. I just wanted to try and understand what the implications of that were. I mean, did we have like thousands of detainees that we had to take within 48 hours to stand trial, or just to give us some detail and information about just that particular part of the judgment, and to what extent has the department actually complied with that order of the Constitutional Court? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Chauke, and then Honourable Raputi.
I think on the chairperson, what we must do is that, firstly, the issue of legislation rests with the committee. The bill that became the law, which is the Immigration Act, is an Immigration Act of Parliament. It is not an Immigration Act of the department. The department implements what Parliament has resolved as an act, as a law, right? Now, when you were to deal with if the bill meets the constitutional requirement or not, I mean, if the law does, in fact, meet the constitutional requirement or not, generally it becomes the responsibility of Parliament. Because, you see, once the bill, I'm now talking Immigration Act, starting from the bill point of view, it gets tabled in Parliament. The department will give you a draft bill, right? I mean, it gives you the bill. Then the committee will then engage on that bill with public hearings and all of that. We take ownership. In fact, the responsibility of the department ceases immediately when the matter is before Parliament. So you will not have a situation where you want to put a blame to any individual or a department. The blame must not be even ourselves. We must simply say that as we're processing the bill, we do not, in fact, look on this issue, which is the constitutional requirement of detention of individuals. It's our responsibility. It cannot be the responsibility of the mayor. I'm not saying it because it's here, but it cannot be. It's the responsibility of Parliament to make sure that all the laws that we pass will meet the constitutional muster. It's how it's done. So if we were to want to parade and put someone to account for that, in return you can still say the same. That in fact it's you, Parliament, that end up passing the law. So I'm saying that let's avoid to get into that space. Let us look at the point that the colleague has just made, the last point, that says, what is it that the department has done since they caught a judgment? Maybe the accounting authority, together with the minister, will talk to us around what they have put in place just to meet that particular court requirement and leave the rest of the issues or who must take a blame and all of that. If we are to take a blame, all of us must take a blame. And in fact, it's Parliament that must take a blame more than the department. Because the department, together with the minister, implement the laws that are passed by Parliament. You know, it's the same as what we are going to do now. We'll do this amendment in the Immigration Act. Someone again is going to challenge it on a particular clause that does not meet the constitutional, you know, requirement. Are we still going to hold some minister again accountable? You're not going to do that. You know, what is important is that it's an embarrassment to all of us. But as a process of a developing country, that this Immigration Act, in fact, we've been working on it left and right for many years. And for now, where it stands, it's one of the best immigration laws ever in the world. It's one of the best immigration laws in the world. I'm saying this thing because I was part of the initial process when we started this immigration law in this country, as early as 1994. So it's still there, and there is still going to get challenges. And those challenges cannot say want to blame them to any individual and say so-and-so must send up an account. Why you have not done the police. We must all the time, together with the court, when the court pronounces it's not the wrong thing, obviously it becomes very expensive, obviously, with that exercise. But time and time, our laws will be amended just to carry on to meet this wonderful regime of immigration regime that we are trying to say, to put as a country, you know. So let us not be hard on each other. Let us just approach it in a way that all of us take this responsibility, and as much as we are now even taking the responsibility to demonstrate our commitment that the committee can even amend this bill. It's because of that commitment. So my appeal again is to work hard to build relationship between ourselves and the department that we do oversight on. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Yeah. No, Chair. I think what Honorable Chauke have said is a mouthful. No one should be blamed and no one is going to announce. And I think this shows that our constitution is working. It protects whoever, irrespective of whether you are a foreign national or not. So we should applaud our constitution other than going and pointing fingers. I think really it is really irresponsible. Let's make sure that where are gaps, we should look for those gaps and we should go forward. Thank you.
Before we proceed, let us manage what you have said before us. Honorable Khalifi has said that we've got to have it in our program. So perhaps by the time we leave here, we've got to have a proposed this thing, where perhaps we can get a space for that the sittings for the committee. Then the second area is a submission by Mr. Hussein on the course and what exactly happened. I don't think that the department can respond right now, but it would assist to have perhaps a written submission to the committee on what exactly happened. Does that satisfy you, Mr. Hussein?
No, Chair, it doesn't, because I think let the department respond. I'm not sure why you're responding for them, whether they're capable of doing it or not. With great respect to you, Chair, that's not your job, that's their job. So I put a question to them, let them just give a response. I'm not sure whether they're capable of doing it or not, and if they want to send it in writing, then they can do that. But I'm not sure that you should be doing that for them.
No, that was not the spirit, Honorable Hussein. I was trying to resolve the problem, but later let the department respond.
No, no, I think Chair, we want to respond on this thing at the top of our heads. I can't sit here and say the cost for case one is so much amount. I'm sure Honorable will know that we are dealing with cases, so I don't want to do that. So I think I support what you are saying. And I think we did respond that we submitted a response to the Constitutional Court, so we can submit that. So I don't say things which are not better by information. So we can submit it instead.
Thank you, Honorable Aplin. Distinguished Aplin. Honorable Minister.
Maybe before the Minister comes in, Chair, you may want Insight to put a timeline on submission of that information so that, you know, all members in the committee are satisfied that in a particular meeting will then get a response from the department. And I think it's important that to get a written, response, because remember, the point that is raising is a very valid point that, all these legal costs, they cost money. But, put them so that members who are passing the budget of this department are satisfied that our money is well spent.
Thank you, Honorable Hussein, and thank you, Honorable Chao. I think it makes sense. I can't stand up and support something.
I'm saying that yes, with the litigations and whatever, I think it doesn't make sense because it's beyond that, Chair. It's really beyond that. I think somewhere, somehow, people are really taking some an advantage about foreign national being detained and that. There's so much that South Africa is doing for foreign national, but we want just order. So I'm just saying that what Comrade Hussein is saying, Honorable Hussein is asking, is really immaterial. Let's look at the bill and close the gaps. I thank you.
Thank you.
On a separate matter, please.
No. Firstly, let me respond. I'll allow you after me. I think, honorable members, no matter how heated we feel, let us concentrate on the light rather than the heat. I know some of these things we feel passionately about, but let us concentrate on the light. Honorable Hussein.
I won't make your job difficult, and I want us to make progress. But I also don't want us to leave matters unresolved, which often happens in the committee, and I want to get it off and deal with it so we can move on. I really do want us to make progress on the bill. But Chair, I want to come back to the point that I raised earlier, and the issue about the violation of the constitutional rights of individuals. And I completely get the point that Honorable Chauke is making. I accept that. We as members of parliament, we are the ones who make the laws. But all of us here around this in this table, Chairperson, we are seen to be the leaders of this country in one way or another. And it's not about passing blame. But the fact remains is that the minister is the political head of the department. And if it requires that us as MPs should make some apology, then we must do so. But the reason why I invited the minister himself, because he seemed to be the political head of this department, there are thousands of people whose constitutional rights were violated. And you are saying that we shouldn't be passing blame or do nothing about it and just move on and make amendments to the act. I get it that we are a democracy in progress. I get it that we've got some good acts and good laws. I completely get all of that. But But just spare a moment for those people, the thousands of people who have been detained without trial. Just think about that for a moment. And all of us here as MPs are leaders in this country. Are we saying to ourselves that we simply just overlook that and move on? None of us have had the courage to say, this thing was wrong, we are sorry, the way in which this law was passed and implemented, and people's constitutional rights were violated. No one is saying it. And I'm inviting the minister to say something about it, so that we can move beyond this point. The fact remains is that if we don't recognize our own weaknesses, as a parliament or as the executive or as a government, it will be wrong, Jay. You can't just simply read these judgments and move on and say we now need to fix this thing. As leaders in society, we must make a statement on it. And it's up to the minister. If he chooses not to make a statement, that's his right. I take the point that Honorable Chauke has made. It's not about passing blame. It's about providing the proper leadership and taking ownership for the mistakes that we make. Thank you.
Honorable Kenya, then the Honorable Minister.
Chairperson, I think we got a lot not much from the lawyer advising us what to do as Parliament. And now I don't understand if really we say we want one person, an individual. It's a blame if we say somebody must make a statement. It means that you are accusing him. So I think I support what Honorable Chauke has said. It's not about Home Affairs Minister only. It's also about us as parliamentarians. Therefore, I don't know what Honorable Hussein is saying when he insists that the minister must really make a statement. I don't think that is fair. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let us distinguish administration from politics. We can all politics. I would like to have a political scenario. The House is there for that. Here now we are dealing with the nitty-gritties of the law. Honorable Khalidi.
No, Chair. No. I think when we started this meeting, we all, as the committee members, united to say, let us chart a way forward on how to deal with this matter in front of us. But it does not mean that the minister must not say something. Even the court judgment is saying, so I don't know why am I laughing stock. Am I a laughing stock? So why when I'm talking, people are laughing, including you, Chair?
No. This is not the spirit of the new South Africa.
What new South Africa now? New dawn. Chair, I'm saying that it must not be correct when a political head is here and then it's being defended by the ANC members. He's not a Sangoma. He's a minister. He can talk for himself. So we are going back where we were as a committee when the portfolio members of the ANC used to defend the minister. And then we are saying we are not blaming the minister, but since the political head is here, and this constitutional court has a minister's name here, these papers, so there is no harm for the minister to say something, because we are dealing with the life of people here. So when the time for submission for all political parties is coming, we are going to make our submission, because we are very clear about the Africans and so forth and so forth. But it does not matter, the minister must come here and be a bubai. It does not mean that, Chair. So please stop protecting a minister. He must do his job. When you were talking, I didn't disturb you. So I must be protected as well. I have a right to talk to this committee. Yeah, please. So I'm saying, Chair, don't protect a minister. The minister is here. If he wants to talk, he can talk, because he's a political head of this committee. So we are dealing with the life of people here. We must not come here and play. We must not abuse us.
Okay, thank you. But if you listened properly, I said after Kenya, it should be the minister. The minister should respond. Now, why do you blame me for protecting the minister? I said the minister...
Chair, I'm not blaming you. I'm blaming your colleagues who's trying to avoid the minister to speak here. Not you. Not you.
No, we never
Honorable Minister.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, as a matter of principle, the Department of Home Affairs deals with a lot of litigation. We do not go out of our way to prompt that litigation. It arises in the course of implementing the act, the laws which are passed by Parliament through this committee. And so the laws that we are administering, having been passed by the House, both the National Assembly and the NCOP, will, in the course of their implementation or at the time of their passing, be subjected to the constitutionality test to establish the extent to which they are constitutional. But in the course of administering or implementing those laws, people may take exception to one aspect or another and test the laws in the court up to a time when, such as in this case, the Constitutional Court itself suggests that a particular clause resulting in a particular implementation of the law is unconstitutional. It was neither in the first instance a malicious intention of the department, nor was it in the first instance a malicious intention of Parliament as the legislative authority to violate the Constitution. So it cannot be that it is a minister or a department or even Parliament itself that is accused of having violated the Constitution, and that's why the judgment doesn't say. It says that this particular aspect violates the constitutional rights of individuals, but it doesn't say that Parliament, in passing the law, was violating deliberately and maliciously the constitutional rights of individuals. The question would be, at what point does the violation arise? Before the law is passed, during the implementation of the law, or when a court decision is taken? And so, it's only after the judgment is made that a particular aspect of the legislation is deemed a violation of constitutional rights. And therefore, I think it becomes difficult to say who particularly must shoulder the responsibility of such violation. More so, or in addition to which, what then are the implications of such a ruling by the Constitutional Court? I think it suffices to say that the Constitutional Court, having made the ruling, the committee goes ahead to amend the legislation to make it compliant with the Constitution as according to the ruling of the Constitutional Court. Any other act beyond and above that would have implications that this committee would have to bear with should it be implemented. So, for example, if you issue an apology, you actually are inviting the people affected to, sue, to seek relief for such. Who's going to bear that responsibility? Where is that money going to come from? The mere capacity that we have? Or are we going to approach the National Treasury to avail money from the
resources that are not available. I think that we need to be very cautious, because this is not the only matter we are dealing with. There have been other decisions before, and there will be others in the future that we may not be aware of at the present moment. We need to be consistent with how we respond to court decisions and how we have responded to them in the past has been sufficient. And I think that to say we need to amend the legislation is acknowledgement enough on our part that we need to comply with the Constitution, and I think it provides sufficient relief. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. I think we've got to go back to number four. Number four says, briefing by the Minister of Home Affairs and the Director General on reasons why the Department of Home Affairs delayed to inform the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs to initiate a committee bill on immigration, and the timeline on what the department has done since the court order. These are the two things we are supposed to do. If we want something additional, let us add it as an item of an agenda for another meeting. For a child.
I think the minister has now spoken. But I think what is important here is that there is a statement that is made by colleagues that the ANC seems to be continuing protecting the executive. And I think we have to make it very clear to our colleagues that it is never and it will never be in the interest of the ANC to protect anyone. Anyone is accountable to Parliament, and Parliament has a right to do oversight over anyone. Right? And that's a principle that we must all operate with. And we're not going to be divided. And I think let us work together with all political parties. Where we want explanation, we must ask for that explanation. Someone will have to account. If someone refuses to account, there are parliamentary processes that will have to get. But let us go with the spirit that of working together as a committee. Where we'll differ sometimes, definitely we'll differ sometimes as of how we look at things and all of that. But that principle we must never break it. Let's work together, colleagues. Let's make sure that we hold the executive accountable in the best interest of our people outside there. Ours is to make sure that the laws that we pass in Parliament are implemented and they impact very positively on the livelihood of our people outside. And that's the spirit that we must operate on. The colleagues have raised critical issues of yours. Those issues must be noted to a point that the department together with the executive would understand how serious the committee is on these issues. And I think the minister has clarified that position. The DG has made input. What we want to do now, Chair, will be for the DG just to outline to us what mechanism have you put in place to respond to the court order. If we deal with that part, then we'll then be satisfied, Chair, that at the side of the department, they have started to comply with the court order. As we deal with the amendment, then we know that work already is being done. Because that's the only way that we should approach this thing. And let's appeal that we want calmness in the committee, but very focused and very robust, in fact, when it comes to issues of accountability. And that's the appeal that I think we're making. From the ANC side, we'll definitely be happy. We're working, and we work with every political party that we're with. Here in this, what's called in this Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs, we're not going to spare anyone because he's in our side or what. We're not going to do that mistake. We have to do our oversight without fear, without fail. Thank you.
Yes, Honorable Kalibi.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think it was very progressive indeed for the Minister to respond, because all of us were listening to his response. I think it was very progressive, because it was going to be a mistake if the minister have left the room without responding on this matter. So we want to say that we didn't want to blame anyone, but we want to hear the political head of this portfolio to talk on this matter. That's all. That's all, Chen. So I want to say to you, thanks very much for the minister to respond on the matter. We are clear now. We know where is the standpoint of the minister. So I'm very happy to hear from Honorable Chauko to say that no one is protecting anyone here. A person who's supposed to account will account to this committee. So we are here to do that, exactly that. So at some point, Chair, it's very important if someone is speaking, someone must listen clearly. And you must not contradict yourself within a space of 2 minutes or 2 seconds, because we're not here to protect anyone, but you want the work of this committee to be done accordingly. That is our work as parliamentarians, as members of the portfolio committee. If we have that spirit, all of us here, we are going to work very smoothly. If someone is here to protect someone, we are going to fight. Definitely sure. You know, Chen, which we can fight. That's why we are acting today. Thank you.
Thank you, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chauge. Thank you, Honorable Mkhaliki, for constructive input. On that note, let us then go to this submission. And then the Ms. Kassan just summarized this document. I think there are documents that have just been submitted for us to be in a position to table this bill before Parliament. Over to you, Ms. Kassan.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Members, what you have before you is a draft request for permission in terms of Rule 273 to proceed with the committee bill. I say draft because I know you only have got it this morning, so there is an opportunity for you to make changes and make further input into this document. The document has been prepared in terms of the requirements of Rule 273 of the National Assembly Rule, which provides that an Assembly committee intending to introduce a bill in the Assembly must, for the purposes of obtaining the Assembly's permission in terms of Rule 268(1), table in the Assembly a memorandum which A. sets out particulars of the proposed legislation, B. explains the objects of the proposed legislation, C. states whether the proposed legislation will have financial implications for the state, and if so, give an account of those financial implications, and D, set out the views of the executive on the objects of the proposed legislation. So it's along those guidelines that the submission has been prepared. I'm not sure, Chairperson, if I should read through the entire thing or whether I should just highlight what each paragraph sets out.
Perhaps let us just get each paragraph in short, just crystallize what's in each paragraph.
Chairperson, the first paragraph merely states that this particular committee is requesting the permission of the House in terms of the relevant rules for the introduction of the Immigration Amendment Bill 2018. Then number one very succinctly sets out what the particulars of the bill would be, and that would be to amend the Immigration Act so as to revise and align the provisions in Section 34 of the Act relating to the detention of illegal foreigners for purposes of deportation with the constitutional rights set out in Section 12 and 35(2)(d) of the Constitution following the Constitutional Court's judgment last year. Part 2 then just goes into a little bit of detail as to what the main findings of the judgment was, and that is basically what paragraph 2.1 reflects, that the court found Section 34(1)(b) and (d) of the Immigration Act inconsistent with Sections 12(1) and 35(2)(d) of the Constitution for the reasons that these sections do not allow for automatic judicial intervention when an illegal foreigner is detained and do not allow for a detained illegal foreigner to challenge the lawfulness of his or her detention in person in court within 48 hours. On page 2, paragraph 2.2 elaborates on the order of the court by stating that the declaration of invalidity was suspended for a period of 24 months to allow Parliament to correct the defect, and it also provided for a remedy that the department needed to employ pending the correction of the defect, which was to ensure that any foreigner detained under Section 34 must be brought before a court in person within 48 hours from the time of the arrest. The court also ordered that illegal foreigners who were in detention at the time the order was granted must also be brought before court within 48 hours. 2.3 sets out what the amendment bill will address, and it merely reflects that it will address the court judgment by amending Section 34(1)(b) and D of the Immigration Act so as to ensure that illegal foreigners detained will be brought before a court in person within 48 hours. The bill will also provide that detained illegal foreigners must appear in court to challenge, in person in court, to challenge the extension of their detention. And then furthermore, the bill will include any necessary consequential amendments that might arise following the proposed amendments to Section 34. Point three, I had preliminary discussed this with officials from the department who indicated to me that currently the department is implementing the court order, and hence the proposed legislation will not lead to any additional expenditure for the state. But they're welcome to still confirm whether that indeed would be the case. And then just finally, the views of the executive on the objects of the proposed legislation is that they support the proposed legislation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tafsa, the distinguished Tafsa.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think what we can do now is just to get the department to speak to us now, practically compliant with the court order. What is it that they are doing now? And then I think it's very clear that our area of focus is Section 34 of the Immigration Act, and then we can then deal with those details. I don't see much of that, but what is important is that compliance now. Maybe the DG can then take us through what the department has done. And then I think we agree with the process that will have to be submitted to Parliament. Obviously, at the level of parties, normally what you'll do, you'll then have each member of the party at the level of us having to convince our chief whip that this committee is going to bring before Parliament such a, and I'm happy that Honorable my sister comrade fighter there served in the chief whip's forum, and when the mentor served before the chief whip's forum, she'll be able to advance in fact on the issue of the decision that the committee has taken to amend the bill. So let's just get the political part and then the matter ends here.
Honorable Mkhalipi, then the department.
Honorable Chauke, I'm Honorable Mkhalipi. You must not forget my name, otherwise we'll fall before you stand. Thank you, Chair. I think the report is proper. No, I'm just joking. I think the report is proper, Chair, except that because we are saying for the first time, maybe what we can do is the way forward. If members have more submission, they must forward it to the secretary to add on the report as a normal standard of doing things. If I feel that as EFF we need to put more submission to this amendment, I think we must do it through the secretary. But seeing this report in front of us, I don't think there's a problem so far. So we can move that way. And then all those processes that she was mentioning, as I have also said before, so now we need to get our program now as a committee to align with the processes. Bear in mind that we are going to have a very long recess. So we must get that program amended for the committee to know if we have to work through the recess to follow the processes that she was mentioning. Otherwise, I don't think there is any problem, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mkhalipi. Perhaps, do you think that 24 hours would be okay or 48 hours? What's the timeline for response? Should we make it 48 hours to respond to the secretary if there is need to respond to the secretary. And then if that is the case, how do we table it to Parliament? How is the program, parliamentary program, standing right now? Are we going to have an opportunity to table it in Parliament?
Chair, that's why earlier I was saying that this document in fact gives us a guide on the parliamentary requirement, what is it that must be done. I think that can be done today. It's not a problem. What we must then do is that Parliament will then process it within its own program of Parliament. You have your programming committee, you have all of these other role players that will have to be involved. What is required from us is just to agree and adopt this approach. Once that is done, the committee has a responsibility now to submit it to Parliament. Right? The other political work that needs to be done with us is that one of electing our chief whips. Because the chief whips are the ones at the end of the day who will then, I'm not talking at the party level now, who will then be able to influence the programming committee so that this matter is then put at the level of the programming committee. But at the same time, what Honorable Kaiti says is that we have to look at our program, the parliament, of the committee now, and look at the, you know, how therefore the schedule, this work that needs to be done, right? Maybe now when we come back from recess, if this thing gets processed today here, when we come back from recess, by that time we'll have received some submission, advertising and all of that would have happened. By the time we come back, we can then sit and do the processing of the draft and all of that. And I see that it's not even a big draft that we're going to deal with. We'll just be amending one clause of the bill. So that can be done here. I think we just have to agree that we adopt this approach, which is a good guide from the legal services of Parliament. And we'll leave it there. There's nothing complicated here so much. But we have to make sure our program of the committee is amended proper to accommodate this work that we're doing. If you're going to do a study tour to Germany, at some point you may have to cancel the study tour.
Okay, do we all agree to adopt this in principle? Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, no, in terms of the process, we said we're implementing the process, it's correct. But the departments which are involved here is NPA, is the Department of Justice, is Police, and is Correction. So all this, because for you to do that, that people must be able to be dealt with within 48 hours. You need to go to a magistrate. And then when you're in the magistrate office, there is a prosecutor, there is a magistrate. And then for Home Affairs, is to make sure that people are getting there. So we are using the custody at police and the times at corrections. But all those things have been declared for that. So we are implementing everything. That's why we don't have a contempt of court around this matter. It is included.
Thank you to everyone. Then let us move to point number 5 of the agenda, that is briefing by the Minister of Home Affairs and Director General on the privatization of the section of the O.R. Tambo International Airport to Fireblade Aviation. Briefing by the Minister.
Thank you again, Chairperson, and to the honorable members. Around 2013, the DG will correct me on some of the details. We received a request from FBO, which operates the Fireblade terminal, to allow them to utilize this Fireblade, this terminal, as an international terminal for VIPs. had, up until then, been operating this terminal at Dinel, at a Dinel facility. So what the fire blade is located at a Dinel facility, which was leased out by Dinel to Fireblade as a domestic terminal for a particular family. So they then submitted a request now to operate it as a VIP terminal for international flights. In 2014, we responded to them and said, we have written letters to all the relevant ministers of departments operating at the port environment to seek their opinions on the matter, because we cannot take a decision without other ministers concurring with it. In the course of that, the letters had been written to all ministers who are relevant to port operations. We received responses from the Minister of Agriculture concurring, the Minister of State Security declining, the Minister of Finance declining, SARS declining, and others did not respond. We then continued awaiting their responses, and in the course of that, because the Fireblade FBO were seeking responses from us on a regular basis on feedback. We then met with them. We initiated a meeting with them, at which meeting we indicated to them that we are still awaiting other ministerial responses so that we are able to give them a proper response. Subsequent to that, Dinel went to court with Fireblade, prohibiting the use of their facility for such purposes. A case which Dinel won in court. It was ruled in favor of Dinel, and so it put a spanner in the works. But nonetheless, we wrote a second letter to the ministers, advising them to provide us with a response as it was sought in order to settle the matter. At which point, the Minister of Finance wrote back to say he was rescinding his earlier declining of this request and now concurring with it on proviso that Fireblade would be charged a service fee for the availability of the immigration, customs, and other services that government would provide at the facility. We then, in January 2017, received a letter from the then acting CEO of Dinel, advising us that Dinel was concurring with the use of Fireblade as a VIP terminal, and that therefore they thought it cleared the way for a positive decision in this regard. After this letter, we met with FBO we advised them that we had received such a letter, we had received another letter from the Minister of Finance, but we said to them, much as this is indicative, there were certain principles which we thought would need to be addressed. One of those principles was that the facility should be available to anybody who wishes to land their private aircraft at that facility. But we said to them, this does not give them an answer, because we still have to await all ministers to respond. And I indicated to them that I would then ask the DG to seek meetings with his counterparts where a decision would be taken to advise the relevant ministers so that we get responses. We then, a few days later, received another letter from now the chairperson of DINEL, advising us, in quite a strongly worded letter, that, well, not directed at us, but strongly worded in relation to their own internal affairs, that the CEO, the acting CEO of DINEL, had acted outside the mandate of the board. In writing the letter he had written to me, and that therefore as the board they were rescinding that letter and were going to subject the acting CE to a disciplinary process. I then immediately informed both FBO telephonically and the DG and said to them everything must therefore be put on hold. Anyway, there is no decision taken. We are still awaiting other ministers, but it would seem that the DINEL process creates complications that will be difficult for us to act beyond. We advised FBO that in this case, and given that the facility they are referring to, that they are operating, is a DINEL facility, and if DINEL as the landlord says no, don't use our facility for this, it would be difficult for us, even with the best intentions, to send immigration officers because they would be trespassing on a property that doesn't belong to us. We then, after that, still awaiting, then court processes ensued. In them commencing, the submission now was for a private terminal for the family, which changed everything we had understood until then. Because until then, we were thinking that it would be a VIP terminal that would be open to anybody who wished to land there on a private jet. But once it becomes a private terminal for the family, much like Lanseria, Lanseria is a private airport. It's a private airport, but Mango can land there, SA Express, SA Airlink, Kulula, British Airways and other airlines can land there. But there is also a private hangar for those who operate private jets. So we thought this would be the same thing, operated along the same principles, but unfortunately it would seem from the court papers that this was a private terminal for the family. We indicated in our submission that the immigration law doesn't permit this. It doesn't permit us to go in this direction. And it is our submission that we cannot allow a private terminal, a private airport for a family, because it would advantage them against everybody else in the country who has to use
the commonly available terminal at OR Tambo International Airport. In our papers, we indicated that we are not in a position, we explained what the process has been and indicated that we are not in a position to authorize a private airport because, among others, we are still dealing as cabinet with a decision to rationalize the number of international airports that we have in the country, which are about, what, 72. International airports. I mean, that's in... I'm talking about airports. But Cabinet had taken a decision at our request as Home Affairs to rationalize even the international airports because we were complaining that, for example, Upington is an international airport. You need to provide immigration officers. But Upington is an international airport only in summer during hunting season and during harvesting season. Nelson Mandela Airport is an international airport, but who lands there? So if there is no rugby game, international rugby game or international soccer game, or maybe some international event, you have to provide immigration officers for an airport that is not utilized for such purpose. We need to rationalize the immigration officers we have to increase our capacities. I mean, even at the time in 2017, we were seriously undercapacitated at OR Tambo International Airport, and our view was that we need to rationalize even the immigration capacity we have to provide a service at the busy international airports where such service is required. The matters went to court. I will try, Chair, because we are appealing the matter at the Constitutional Court, not to get into the merits of the case, but to just explain how we got to where we are. The matter served before the High Court, it served before a full bench of the High Court, and served before the Supreme Court of Appeal, at which case the court decision was in favor of the applicant. Our argument, both in relation to the High Court and the Supreme Court, was that we have not been listened to in terms of the merits of our argument, but the matters were based on what we thought were peripheral and quite dismissible issues that served before the court. Now, obviously, I had left the Department of Home Affairs at the time that the judgments were being made and the appeals were being made up until my recent return in March this year. When the Supreme Court made its judgment around September, October last year, that in favor of the applicants, they then submitted a complementary, or is it supplementary, a supplementary application to be allowed to operate the Fireblade meanwhile pending a decision by Home Affairs to appeal or not, which was granted on condition that they would pay for the immigration service. That has subsequently been done with only the condition that, not the condition, with only a twist that only the immigration services are being paid for. All other government services are not being paid for. So government services are provided to a private family for free as a result of the decision. That includes custom services, it includes agriculture, it includes all other services which have to be provided, in, as well as health, which have to be provided at a port of entry and port terminal. Because when aircraft land or depart, we need to check all of those things. So all other services are being provided for free except the immigration services, stretching us a little bit, because when there is an aircraft landing on this other side, we need to provide a service there. But the issues that we draw attention to, one are that the Immigration Act doesn't provide for private family airports. This is a public good. It must be provided by government for the benefit of everybody, those with money and those without money, especially those without. Secondly, there is no policy on the privatization of airports. In the absence of such a policy, we can't invent one as we go. There has to be a proper discussion in government as to whether this is a direction we want to take. This is more so because, as a result, the implication of this decision as it stands is that we now have two applications. They didn't come after the court decision. They actually came during the process. An application for a private family terminal at the Cape Town International Airport and another private family terminal in George. So the implication of this decision is that these two must be granted because a precedent has been set. But it means that we won't end there. It means that those who can pay can decide for themselves at any national key point that we now want to provide a service here. If you don't grant it, we will take you to court, and there is a precedent, you will have to grant it. The problem is that what happens if there are two or more seeking a similar facility at a single port? In this regard, our argument is that the fact is that there was no letter either from the minister or the DG. While first, there was no competitive bidding, because any transaction has to follow competitive bidding. The principle of first come, first serve, it doesn't apply, because the PFMA doesn't recognize that. It can't be that simply because I supplied you with paper first, therefore the contract belongs to me. There has to be competitive bidding. You need to have three quotes. You need to sift. You need to have an adjudication committee, a bid evaluation committee. They sit, they go through the bid, they make a recommendation. And then the DG, not the minister, the DG as the accounting officer must write a letter to the winner of the bid saying, I therefore confirm that you have been successful in the following process. That has not been done. There was no competitive bidding in this case. There is no letter from the DG in this case. There is not even a contract co-signed by the DG and the winners of the bid in this case. And so our legislative framework stands weakened at this moment, because you are not able to determine whether going forward, not only in relation to ports of entry, but in relation to any other service that government may either require from the private sector or may not be aware that we require from the private sector, but the private sector thinks they want to provide. So the private sector can simply come to you and say, we are providing you this service, we came first, you take the service. It creates a policy and legislative conundrum for us, because we do not know how we are going to proceed in relation to all other matters subsequent to this. I have, upon discussions with the department and our council, decided that we will seek a court, a constitutional court appeal, in order to establish the legality and constitutionality of this issue following these challenges that we believe we are facing, so that we can also test whether the principles of equality are being applied properly, our legislative framework is being complied with, and what is the constitutional implication of throwing the PFMA in the fire in this regard, because we would need to know how to deal with similar cases going forward. The implications will not only affect Home Affairs, they will also affect all other government departments. Colleagues will, honorable members, will pay attention to an expression in the judgment that relate to the minister having lied. Much as in terms of legislative of legal procedure, you know, it's an opinion, not a ruling. It's an opinion of a judge, not a ruling. What matters to us the most is actually the ruling, which is the matter that we are appealing, because we do not want to personalize this issue. We actually do not believe that there was any lie anywhere, because if the minister had granted permission, the minister would have followed the legal prescripts until the end. In the absence of such legal prescripts, we stand with our belief that our conviction that there was no approval of this decision formally granted, and so the matter is really irrelevant. But the issue that we are raising, as I say, is a matter of principle which applies to whether the poor are entitled to good quality services only after the rich have received them, whether the laws of the country can now be disregarded when the rich are concerned, and whether government should provide free services to the rich when the poor sometimes even have to pay for them, and whether we are now introducing the principle of privatizing ports of entry by stealth in the absence of a police. So that is the issue in relation to the fire plate, Chair. Thank you.
This seems to be a lot of state. Honorable Mkhalibi, then Honorable Hussein. Honorable Hussein, then Honorable Kenya, then Honorable Rakuti, then Honorable Chowder.
Chair, thank you very much, and I express my thanks to the Minister for the explanation. I want to say that although the Minister has made a number of statements which I believe are bordering more on political statements rather than legal arguments, this is a legal matter. Much of what he said already has been dismissed by two courts already. In fact, some of the things he says here today are even contradictory to what's in these both judgments that I've read. But nonetheless, I mean, I'm also disappointed that the minister has chosen not to address satisfactorily the point made by the judge when he said, by telling a deliberate untruth on facts central to the decision of this case, the minister has committed a breach of the constitution so serious that I would characterize it as a violation. You'd recall, Chair, when I raised this on a previous occasion, the first time I raised it in the committee, the minister suggested that I was telling lies until I handed this thing to him. I don't think he knew about it at that stage. So I'm disappointed that he hasn't chosen to deal with that part properly and dismisses it. The fact that a judge expresses an opinion on this matter doesn't mean that it doesn't mean anything. Otherwise, they won't express these opinions. And I would advise the minister to take it more seriously than dismissing it in the manner in which he had done. Chair, I come to this issue of the cost again, which I raised earlier on. And I think when we get to the end of this case, whatever the outcome of it is going to be, you're going to see again at massive cost. This issue has been dragging on now for a number of years. And we constantly complain as a committee about the lack of funding that we have available for the real work of what we're supposed to do. I find it very difficult to believe that the minister's version of events, as he puts it today. Because when I read in these court papers, he even met with those people, a number of meetings and discussions, took them down a road, even suggested that former President Zuma must officially open this thing and all of that. So I think his comments here today are completely contrary to what I'm reading in the court papers. Unless the judge is lying. But there is a completely different version here from what I'm reading in both those judgments. Chair, let me tell you what the elephant in the room here is on this matter. And again, we'll give the minister an opportunity to respond, because this is the information I pick up. Whether it's correct or not, the minister must tell us. The suspicion is that something happened between 28th of January, when the minister met with the directors of this company and gave an in-principle agreement to proceed with the matter, instructed Jackie McKay, and I'm according to the documents I'm referring to. This is not my version, this is the court's version. On the 28th of January, when the minister and Mr. McKay and a number of other officials met with him, and there was an in-principle agreement there at that meeting, and of course that's subject to challenge and appeal. But somewhere around the 5th of February, things turned around. Something happened in between that period. And the suspicion is that the minister's relationship with the Gupta family has got something to do with it.
Whose suspicion is that?
Well, I'm putting it to the minister now. It's my suspicion. Yeah. And that although there was an arrangement with Fireblade for a number of years, investigating the possibility of having this operation at Oar Tambo, at some point an opportunity was seen to rather benefit a different family than the family that Minister Gigaba is referring to. That is the suspicion. Whether or not it's true, Minister Gigaba will respond to it. And the direct question I put to you, Minister, have you ever had any discussions with the Gupta family around the Fireblade matter? Chair, the minister talks about the acting CEO of Danel, who apparently acted outside of his mandate, and that there was disciplinary charges being brought against him. I'd like to just ask, what do you know what the outcome of that is? I mean, have they dealt with it and have they dismissed him, or what exactly is going on there? I'm not sure if you know the details. Chair, the last point that I want to raise, or question that I want to put, is the minister talks about two further applications in Cape Town Airport in George. Can I just ask, who are the applicants in that matter? Who are the people who are applying for the same service in Cape Town and in George? Thank you.
I'm sure it's not the culture, right? Okay. And then the next. And.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. My question, Minister, is on the, thank you for the information, but my question will be on the issue of up to now. You said that there were even some ministers were not coming up with their responses or for, with their opinions. Now, what have you done so far to convince them, other ministers? Maybe they are not convinced. Secondly, yes, and the landlord then says no to this new dispensation. So that the department can't send immigration officers and they will be trespassing, as you said so. Now my question is how are the operations carried out then, now? Thirdly, you say that it now it's a private terminal for a particular family. Is it now considering the family, is it domestically or internationally, those families, or is that any family on either side, either be domestic or international? And also to check if immigration law doesn't permit, what are the implications therefore in case of customs services, because I'm concerned about health, because there is a risk here in the issue of the customs. I think that is all, Chairperson.
Thank you. Okay. Who's the next?
Yeah, thank you very much, Minister, for really outlining, because, and I was just asking myself whether was it necessary or really to expatiate about the whole thing when we are having the judgment before us and when the department has appealed to the Constitutional Court on this judgment. My view, I believe that really it can't be one family benefiting in everything here in South Africa. It is totally unfair. So let's wait for the appeal of the Constitution, and I think it will be on our side that fairness must really prevail. No one family can really rule. They are ruling South Africa. It's totally unfair. So Constitutional Court will be awaiting for that ruling. I thank you.
I'm sure that the courts won't allow private action.
Yeah.
We have belief in our courts.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much, Minister, for the briefing, because we understand that this matter is a matter of public interest. So us as members of Parliament, as representatives of our people on the ground, we need to get facts. But I'm not sure whether I've understood the minister well when he said that the department has appealed the matter. So I'm not sure if it's fair enough that we should discuss it, or we should wait for the court or wait for the hearing so that we can be able to get the matter. Or I'm not sure if we can be able to get all the facts from the minister now, because if the matter has been appealed, it means that it's sub judice. But I stand to be corrected there. I'm not sure whether I've heard minister correctly when he said that the department has appealed the matter. So I think we should wait for all the court processes to unfold so that we will know exactly as the committee what to do. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I think we need to really register our concern that, you know, we are really not happy that you find a situation where our national key points gradually are being, you know, undermined, or slowly so. You saw it with the previous examples of this, where the guests that were going to a wedding somewhere in a resort in San Cedar to land at the national key point. In fact, is a serious concern from our side. And what we want to do is that we'll definitely respect the fact that the minister has briefed the committee today, and the minister has now appealed the ruling of the appeals court. What will concern us much, Chair, is that what do we do then in between? Is that do we then sit back and say we wait for the appeals when our ports of entries, national key points are being occupied by those who have money? I think there's very serious concern, Chair, that and the minister just said that there are a number of applications that he's sitting with now, and I think the colleague there has already asked that they give us a list of those who have applied. There's a lot of concern. We'll end up not running this country, in fact, or unless those who have means will be the one who will benefit out of this democracy and have full savings. We are providing a savings to a family that they are receiving it for free of charge. It's a concern. And this committee cannot just keep quiet. We'll have to seriously reflect on these issues. You have a SARS, a custom at the whatever arrangement, which you call it, the blade, whatever, that are in operation for free. For free, you have other stakeholders, by the way. You know, you have your police, you have whoever that gets involved in an arrangement of a terminal or an airport. It involves a number of departments. And there's no clarity, in fact, from the department side, that what these other departments are doing. You know, and I think in line with what the minister has just raised, is that we need to look at our legislation too, seriously so again. There's no contract between ourselves and this family currently now, where we are sitting. There's no contract. What does it mean? Does it mean, therefore, we have to sit back and wait for the outcome of the court? So it means that, Chair, there's so much that needs to be done. We have to find time as this committee, as quickly as possible, to really study this judgment proper in ourselves. Because for now, we'll just speculate and take it from the point that the minister just referred. We have to refer this matter to the legal services of Parliament. Study this judgment proper, and then look at the gaps again, as this portfolio committee again, who have a responsibility to deal with matters of ports of entry and national key points at the same time. Look at the implication, and then advise accordingly, because we have to find a way in which this is not allowed. It cannot be that because I have means, therefore, me and my family are privileged against the 50-odd million of South Africans. Can be. I think we have to condemn this thing to the strongest extent it deserves. It can be. We cannot open up ourselves to this extent. Not long ago, it was the Guptas. National key point, the police were escorting them left and right on the road to Sun City. People have to be shifted out of the road by police. Then it must be normal. That is fine. Now we are happy. We have this democracy that benefits the richer. It cannot be checked. So let's subject on our own this matter to the legal services. Let's in fact have a debate ourselves in this committee on this matter. And then be able, because we have said that the custodian of legislation rests to this particular portfolio committee, laws of parliament. The Immigration Act is the Immigration Act of Parliament. We are the custodian. We have a responsibility to look at the gaps, if there are any gaps. PFMA is being sorted here. There is no advertisement. This thing just happened. The court has, I don't want race to come out in condemning the courts, but the court has found some kind of a weakness somewhere within our laws. So let us not blame each other now. Let's not blame the minister now, but let's do the necessary work that must be done by ourselves so that this thing does not happen. And those who have applied, find a way in which those applications are sort of handled and dealt with. You know, because if they already, a principle is now being established that anyone who can put up an application can get permission to go and run George Airport, Cape Town Airport and all of that, it's a problem that we cannot just allow it just to carry on like that. So my plea, Chair, is that this matter, maybe alone in the, together with the legal services, in the next meeting of the committee, let's have a discussion around this matter. Seriously, so have a discussion around this matter and look at how best we can make sure that such things do not happen. It really undermines everything that we have fought for. It undermines even the security of the state, where anyone just lands in that, what you call, whatever is terminal, you call it, because we don't even know where is it. In fact, at some point, this committee will have to take an interest to go there and see exactly what is happening there. Because we cannot want to legislate and complain at the same time without even knowing practically what is happening there. The national efforts, the base, we know where is it, and we cannot even just go there. You know, you have to apply even before you go to that air base where the Guptas landed for free with their champagne and everything. You know, so I think at the airport it's easy here that we can arrange jointly with the department, in fact, to go and see the kind of activities that are happening there. And it's a matter of agency, Chair, we have to do that. We need to find, even if we are to send a small delegation from this committee that can go there, assess, look at what is happening exactly that, so that we are able to advise accordingly. And I think that government itself will take a serious interest on this matter. Government, I've not even had them issuing a statement. I'm not sure if they've ever issued a statement with the concern. And I really want to share the concern that the minister is raising with us today. He's been very principled on the issue of making sure that we protect what belongs to South Africans. And I think that must be applauded, as much as there may be other issues that they will have picked up in between the engagement with the said family. But the principle is that the public interest must always be protected at all costs. So I'm proposing, Chair, that let's subject this matter to further engagement and appreciate this input that has been made and really work very hard to defend what belongs to South Africans. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. First of all, I just want to get a clarity, because now we are told we are given two documents regarding the court decision. But according to my understanding, there is a constitutional court judgment that was taken on the 7th of March, 2018. So I just want to seek a clarity why we were not given that document, because I think it will also help this committee to understand where we are with the matter. Otherwise, it's a fake document. Yes. Otherwise, if it is a fake document, because now the committee members are speaking as if this matter can be appealed. But according to the document that is here, there is a constitutional court judgment on the 7th of March, 2018. And the matter and Home Affairs was dismissed on that day, 7th of March. So if we can get a clarity on that one. we will be very happy, because now, as the member Chauke is saying, that we need to engage further about this matter, because there's a lot of confusion around this matter. If I was listening correctly to the minister explaining when he was making his explanation in front of the portfolio committee, they met, this matter started in 2013 as per the request of the Oppenheimers. And then in 2014, according to the minister, he responded to them to say that there are other departments that need to be engaged. But in 28 January 2016, it seems as if the minister granted them. He approved. And when the minister continuing to engage on the matter, he said that there is no immigration act that allow the private terminal in our airport. So my question then is to say that if the minister was very clear from the beginning, which there is no policies in the department, there is no act can permit this, why the minister didn't just tell them from the beginning to say, look, there is no act that can permit us, and we don't have a police or any policies in the department. If the minister is telling us the truth that he didn't grant them these Oppenheimers, because he was supposed to be fair and to be honest to them from the beginning to say that, no, there's no law that can allow me to grant you this permission. So why the minister was raising expectations from the first place? And for these people, these Oppenheimers, because according to my understanding, there were minutes that were leaked internally. And the Oppenheimers got hold of those minutes. That's why they win this thing in court, to say that, in fact, this thing was granted. So I agree with Honorable Chauke to say that let us continue engaging, because we need to get some more clarification on this matter, because instead of minister providing some clear, and it brings more confusion than ever. And it is going to be worse if there is a constitutional court judgment, the highest court on land, if this matter has been dismissed. So can get a guidance, Chair, to say that is it correct to say that on the 7th of March, the matter was taken to court and the court dismissed the case? Because I agree with some previous speakers to say that, in fact, you can't allow this thing. It means that the Oppenheimers and those who are rich in this country, they are not going to use any laws. They are going to use money. So the poorest of the poor, they are their own. So we can't allow this situation. We must be very firm as the committee to say that we can't allow people who have money to control us. So, Chair, if I can get those clarity, maybe I can be very happy, and then we can be able to chat a way forward on this matter. Otherwise, stella manzi emhlane edatha. Uminister Mzulu ke uzowazi ntini. Abanye, they must go and learn isiZulu. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I wanted to keep quiet in this meeting until the end, but sometimes it's difficult. You need to say something. You see, if I was the first speaker, I will request the House not to talk about this matter, because we will end up saying something that tomorrow will regret. I want to put before all of us that up to so far, we lost two cases. The department, I don't know what made the department to continue appealing and appealing. They've got maybe good reasons. But with my short mind of understanding legal matters,
I will say I advise the committee to leave this matter because it's still sub judice, not to discuss it. The only thing is that let us pray with the department to win this matter. Because if they lose, it will come with difficult circumstances. Your consequences. And you must know that it will even go to the point whereby other people must resign. So you should not take this matter light. It's very difficult. That's why my head is down. Because I read this thing before I came here. And I consulted. So that's why, Gary, let's leave this matter. It's sub judice. And wait for the outcome. And if it's true that there is that outcome on the 7th of March, we need to know. But I know that maybe it's still coming. So my humble appeal is that, including that fighters, Honorable Mkalipi and Honorable Chauke, we don't need any further engagement on this issue. We must just sit back, keep quiet, and wait for the judgment. Why I'm saying this? A politician can want to talk further about this and talk, but there's nothing we'll do. It's a legal matter, this thing, and it's in the Constitutional Court. And if you go deeper and read what is happening, the minister is implicated here. So that let us not want to rub a wound with assault. Let us leave this matter, is sub judice, and wait for the judgment. My appeal. I thank you, Chair.
Before I put it, there are two views in this house. There is a view that says there is an appeal, that is the department is appealing on this matter. And then there's a view that in March there was a decision of the Apex Court, which is the final arbiter on matters. What exactly is the state of play as things stand today? Before you respond.
Tasha, let me explain. No, the court judgment of the 7th, I think maybe the members they have. You'll remember when we were approaching the matter, we said went to the SCA, but at the same time we approached the Constitutional Court. Then the Constitutional Court simply said on the matter, whilst this thing is at the SCA, they don't need to deal with it. They said we're not dealing with it for now. So there was no judgment on the merits of the issue. So that's why now we're going back to the Constitutional Court. That's where we are. So the ruling of the 7th of March was simple around that issue. So if they've got the yeah, that's right.
Okay, thank you. Raputi, then Chauke.
Yeah.
Oh, Kenya, yeah. Sorry, Ma. There was Kenya before you.
Yeah, Chair, I think the Honorable Chauke has also proposed, whilst we are still waiting for the processes of the department, I'm also supporting the notion of saying that we should go. It's urgent. We should go and see what is really happening. Because this one family is totally undermining the entire 54 million South Africans. So please set a date whereby all of us, we can go to that OR Tambo and see actually what is happening. That is my plea. I thank you.
Honorable Kenya before Honorable Chow.
Thank you, Sir President. I think there's this document, which these letters, which are more confusing. Looking at page 21 now, and that says, I think that Honorable Nene, then in 2015, express concern on the private entity funding operations. But at the same time, there was a recommendation that there must be a renewal, annual renewal for 3 years. To my understanding now, it's 2018. That was said in 2016. Just want to check now if that renewal has been done, because this is worrisome, because there's national interest here. So have that happened? Because now we are just going to be through to 3 years. As Honorable Mukalipe has talked about this 2013 issue, meaning that despite years down the line, this project has been dangling, doing something we don't understand. Also, when you look at another page here, on page 22-23, on January 2016, Daniel wrote a letter to the minister as follows. Now I'm concerned about the endorsement that now Daniel approves and supports tenants. And then he said that the tenants, which to my understanding are the officers, immigration officers. Now, there's this one is talking about the endorsement. Now, also of this, to a status for the approval to operate. Who is supposed now to approve? But as we are still having this problem, which we are talking about. Can you share, person? I think those are the two three areas to me.
Honorable Chair, okay. No, Chair, the matter that we are dealing with, which as much as we agree that the matter is subdued, it's correct that Parliament must reflect on these issues. It's correct that Parliament should look at the loopholes in the law, if there's any, so that this thing does not happen again. Parliament still has a right to call those who are responsible to explain themselves on this matter. Yes. If Parliament fails to do its oversight, Chair, it will create a very serious problem for us. It's unfortunate when this whole thing was happening, Parliament was not taken on board. That's the unfortunate part, because if we are aware, we'll have advised differently from the start, right? But it's a challenge of the laws that we have, right? Here you have a situation where a family is privileged to have services from government for free of charge. And I know the appeals then deals with the other issues that I don't want to get into. Our interest, complete members, is that let us have a discussion on our own, subject these documents that we have just received from the court, subject them to our legal services. Get your legal advisors, the Committee of Parliament, too. Nothing stops you to do that. Get your legal advice on this matter. Develop an approach that whatever that becomes the outcome of the court can come back and say the decision of the Supreme Court of Appeal stands. If it says it stands, what then are you going to do? It means that all these other applications will have to process them. You don't have a choice. Therefore, the point that I'm making here is that let us subject with the minister or the department, in fact, on our own, because a number of stakeholders are implicated in this exercise. It's not only the Department of Home Affairs. You have finance there, you have SAR that has a particular position, you have Danel that has made a particular input. So all of those role players, at some point, you may have to call them, depending on the matters that are before the appeal. And we have to understand again what is it that is being appealed. You may want to go to that exercise. What are we appealing? So my take, Chair, is that we appreciate the fact that the minister has came before the committee and briefed the committee on the matter that is of a national interest. Our Tambo is a national key point. It's not just an airport in the village there in South Africa, where I come from, where every chickens and cows can land and pass the National Or Tambo is a national key point. Whatever that comes there in that particular area, it's of a serious interest for us, for the security of the country. So when you deal with issues of someone having a private arrangement, whatever that comes in there, all of us must have an interest. So I'm proposing that we are going to schedule this matter as a committee, refer all these documents. We do have the legal services of Parliament.
help us go through and get a proper legal advice to. Nothing stops us to do that. Once we've done that, Chair,
Okay.
So,
okay.
I'm not sure that is in line with the... So please, can I be given a chance just to speak my mind, and then colleagues can then come in and make their input. But I think that it's important that Parliament will take a serious interest on this thing. We respect the issue that the matter is before the court, the appeal process is on. The appeal process may take you the next 2 years, honourable members. What then happened? My point is that what happened in between, right? What happened in between, not to interfere with the appeal process or to expose the minister in detail. We have said that don't go into detail of what we're dealing with. Let us just deal with what is practical for us that we must do. And the proposal that we are making, Chair, that we even put up a small delegation that can go and observe these operations, it's very important, Chair. It's very, very, very important. So, you know, this thing of a rich family at the expense of the poor, it's a very serious issue, Chair. And this Parliament is meant to protect the poorest of the poor.
Yes.
If this Parliament cannot do that, who's going to do it? Who's going to do it, Chair? Can you not comment? Can we really take this matter very seriously? I'm not sure that we know what we're dealing with. This matter, Chair, is that we have opened up the country to some private families that have the well-off. This is what we have done. So we'll have to take a very serious interest on this issue. Right? So that's my take, Mr. Chair, that, and I'm going to insist that we then do exactly what you have said, that refer these issues. Honorable Kekana has an opportunity, obviously, as a lawyer himself, he has studied the document. A number of members that are here will not have that capacity to go through and understand the court judgment to that extent. Right? Parliament has a support for these committees at the legal phases of Parliament. So why do you want to say, no, we'll await and deal with legal matters ourselves here, when we have a legal arrangement, I mean the legal section of Parliament that can give you support? This one must happen here. And I think if we do that, we'll definitely demonstrate, even to those who are applying, because they're going to put pressure on the department to give them George Airport and Cape Town Airport. Sure. This is what is happening. Applications between George Airport and the Cape Town Airport. Very soon, they're going to be privatized too. Do we have to allow this thing?
No.
It can't be, Chair. So my take is that Parliament sees itself with this matter and raise our serious concern, as we have said, and then deal with the way forward of what is it that we must do with regard to this matter moving forward. Kalipi.
Yeah.
No, thank you, Chair. Thank you very much, DG, for that clarification, because it was confusing. Chair, I just want to put on record to say that I support the appeal that the department is doing, because we can't allow the situation. That one must be very clear. We can't allow a rich family to rule South Africa. So the appeal is very correct, but you must make sure, DG, because I also get worried when your lawyers are taking this matter to two courts at the same time. What kind of a lawyer is that? To say, let us go to a constitutional court, let us go to a smaller court. What kind of a lawyer is that? They want just to scoop money. They were supposed to advise you correctly, but no, this thing is not going to be processed in both courts. That's one. Secondly, I don't know, Chair, but I think you must file your head of argument very correctly this time. I know that you are dealing with a very serious lawyer, which I trust, but I don't know what happened in between. And as you remember, Chair, when Minister Ayanda Dlodlo was the minister, we wrote a letter as EFF to say, please appeal this thing. Please appeal this thing. So I was worried if you're dismissed in a constitutional court, but now there is a clear explanation to say that no, we still can. But now the department must get correctly how to file on the constitutional court. Because it must be very clear, as other members are putting very correctly, we can't be ruled by the open hammers here. It means that people who are not saving money, they are going to be poor for the rest of their life. As correctly Comrade Chauke is saying that this parliament is about the poor, rest of the poor. So if we are going to allow people to practice the apartheid setup, because these people accumulated these rich money during apartheid. Now they want to control us through our airport. Where are we going to go? Where are we going to go? So this is very serious matter. I agree with Honorable Chauke. Let us take this matter very serious. So those members who are demoralized, like Honorable Keka, and I was also worried today, which why is keeping quiet? Maybe it's captured. But he's telling us that, no, the document you've read has demoralized him. No, don't get demoralized. This is your job. Let us soldier on and fight this thing of open humans. Unless there's nothing that you can do. Thank you, Chief.
Honorable Kekane will be the last before the department responds. Because really, we've got enough of the briefing now. And then the next step, I think we all agree that we've got to then go for legal support in Parliament.
And
oversight.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I don't want to go to that level. Maybe I will agree with Honorable Munisi that since this matter is of public interest, it's true that the department must do the honorable thing of appealing. But I'm still saying that my understanding is that sub judice means another thing, unless if other people doesn't understand what sub judice is. But I wanted to check with the department, DG, if you have already filed an appeal or you are still thinking of appealing. I thank you. I'm done.
Yeah, I'm told to chair now for 2 seconds.
Oh.
No, yeah, you can come in. And then we'll ask the department to respond and then we'll close the matter.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, I think first we need to understand as public representatives what we are here for. I think part of it is to protect the poorest of the poor, our people, ordinary people on the ground, and to protect our taxpayers' money. I think too much is in stake here, Chairperson. So, as a committee, we need to make sure that we do the right things at the right time. We act now and do our oversight properly, supporting Honorable Chauke that it's better to go there so that we can be able to touch and feel the situation there, so that we know exactly what is happening and what to do next. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Can we therefore request the department to respond to the comments made by members without prejudicing yourself as you respond?
Okay, thanks, Chair. I'll just start with the administrative issues. Chair, how the operations are carried out is based on the court order, because that was the interim order which was given. So once the interim order is given, whatever you wanted to follow, you follow the court order. So that's how now they are carried out, based on that, whether custom is there, health is there, home affairs is there, is based on that court order, not on any other thing which we have. And then now I clarified now the issue of the court's judgment of the 7th. And then now the renewal, it's then when the minister was writing at that time. So it's not something which was implemented based on that. That's why now it was the court order of October, the court order which were operating with it there. Then I think the issue of, we said we are appealing the matter. We didn't say we're filed yet, but we are in the process of appealing. We have informed the lawyers, we are preparing the papers. That's where we are.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to honorable members and distinguished DG. for the questions and comments. The honorable members have expressed overall support for the approach we are taking, and we are quite firm on this approach. We were clear even from the outset that this thing would work only if accessible and available to any other South African who may wish to utilize it. And we were clear that, but that was not an approval, because an approval depends on all other ministers saying yes. And if all said no, you see, if all said yes, we would then have to proceed to establish a policy and follow the procedure to ensure that there are no gaps and loopholes. Nobody can infer concurrence or approval on the basis of a leaked internal memo. We talk through internal memos as the department. We talk through internal memos. I don't want the DG to be afraid to send me a memo because he is not sure whether it won't be leaked, because a bribery took place here. Fundamental issue is the only way they could get hold of an internal memo is through bribery. They bribed someone to get hold of an internal memo. It was not directed at them, it was not for them, because if it was directed at them, it would have contained their name, their address, and would have been signed directly to them. It was not their memo, it was not their approval. They bribed someone in the department to obtain it. I don't think it should have stood, but I'm not a lawyer. I can't determine these issues. No, the issues we are raising, Honorable Hussein, are not political. They are legal. They are extremely legal. They pertain to the PSMA. Now, when I say to you, you can't move from there and open a spaza shop at the corner there without following PSMA. I'm not making a political argument. I'm making a legal argument. We adopted the PSMA to guide transactions between the state and any private party. It was not followed in this regard. When we say that there is no police, we mean it's not a political argument, it's a legal argument. Until there is a policy that guides, you can't just decide that because I have money, I will take this without police being there. It's not a political argument, it's a legal argument too. When we talk of issues of equality and fairness, yes, it's political, but it's also legal. Because I think what honorable members are raising is, should rich families in the country have rights to cut off the fat for themselves and decide that I want this, I can pay for it, I'm taking it. If you don't give it to me, I'm taking you to court. And I will bribe your officials to obtain internal documents from you. The so-called minutes. You see, when you are two parties and are meeting, your notes are not my notes. And your notes do not constitute a minute of our meeting, because you did not bring them to me for my approval. Show me where I attached my signature to those so-called minutes. Where?
So, just a point, sir. But, Minister, please try not to expose yourself much on the process that you are going to be engaging on your appeal, so as to arm those that they want to defeat in this platform. Try and avoid that temptation to engage in detail.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Member.
Sorry, with respect, I would advise the Minister not to take legal advice from a politician.
This is the politician. This is involved. from my friend, by the way. A politician not to take political advice from a lawyer. I'm confused, Chair.
If to be very honest, is that the laws that the lawyers interpret are the laws that are made by politicians. So politicians are very advanced in understanding the issues before the lawyer himself, you know. That's why they always consult senior counsel after another senior counsel and another senior counsel. But politicians have just made the law, and the law is Immigration Act, it ends there. And the national key point, it ends there. You can't bypass it.
Okay, let us not interrupt the minister now. We've got lunch to eat.
Thank you, Chair. I stand advised both by lawyers, by lawyer politicians, and by politician lawyers. So I think, Honourable Chair, what the point I was trying to drive at is that a lot of the facts are completely incorrect. Ultimately, the test is how are transactions entered into between government and any private party service provider. That question has got to be answered so that as government, we don't find ourselves meeting someone and they say to you, you know, I want to provide home affairs services, and I say, and this guy goes to court next time and says, the minister said, he agreed. It will become a difficulty. It's important that court should ask for actual documents. Now, the Honourable Hussein then may have not heard me. I did say that I met the FBO people on two occasions, and I did indicate that I spoke to them on the phone too, because you know I had nothing to gain from doing it, but I did not think it was wrong for me to keep them updated as to the processes that were following, because they had taken the trouble to submit a formal request. So I thought I should keep them updated. There is no response. I'm still awaiting responses. I have received this letter. Actually, what happened between the 28th of January and the 5th of February? It's not between the 28th of January. It's prior to that. I indicated in my briefing earlier, I received a letter from the DINEL acting CEO, and I received another opposing letter from the chairperson of the DINEL, which changed everything. If you get a letter from the CEO of a company and another letter from the chairperson of the board, you are obliged to listen to the chairperson of the board, because he's speaking on behalf of the board. Whether he was right or not, it was not for me to subject that to a test. I'm not the Minister of Public Enterprises. I'm not the shareholder minister of DINEL. I'm not going to call to make a roll call on all board members to ask if indeed what the chairperson is saying is correct or not. I realize that there is a contradiction within this company. We cannot go on the letter provided by the CE, and I don't know about the letter provided by the chair, so let's take the DINEL as if there was no letter from the acting CE. So there was no discussion with the Gupta family. In actual fact, this again is hearsay, which was substantiated by a completely bizarre story of a conversation which took place on a private jet between the chair of DINEL allegedly and Mr. Ajay Gupta, which was overheard by a pilot who was sitting at the cockpit with two engines running. How he overheard this, I still have to be convinced. I don't know how it happened, unless they went to brief him, to talk in front of him at the cockpit, at which case I will question their motives. Or they invited him to their private conversation and they spoke in front of him, at which case, again, I would question their motives. But these two should have been dismissed as hearsay and nothing but nonsense. Now, the The department is taking, as I say, a principled case. I don't know how the outcome of the Dinel disciplinary hearing ended, I'm not able to resolve it. I mean, to respond to this. It was not my duty to pursue it. It was their own internal process, and I would have awaited them to provide me with a finalization on the matter. To my understanding, they have never rescinded the letter that was written by the chair, and so the letter from the chair still stands. What do we do to convince other ministers? I think for now, we don't need to ask them to do anything. I think we should follow the court process to the end and present our arguments there and not bring them into the matter as it is until it has been finalized, and we now, whichever way it is decided, when we now need to deal with the implications of the court decisions. The FBO is now an international terminal, and that really is our concern. It had started operating, I don't know what year. It started operating before the World Cup as a domestic terminal, because at times, the airports would be full. And you needed to, especially the private jets, to take them to another slot. And that's how they were permitted to operate. It is a domestic terminal. You don't need immigration service. It's just a domestic. But once it became an international terminal, the rules would change. All sorts of things would have to be decided. The other issues, Comrade Chair, Honourable Chair, were comments, and other questions have been clarified by the DG, and I think the question as to why are we appealing the matter when we have lost two cases, I would take it that there are always more than one opinion. Legal opinions, and our legal opinion suggests that we should appeal it, and for the reasons that we have advanced, both legal and political, it has happened in many cases that a case is appealed up to the Constitutional Court, and a different decision is obtained from there. So I don't take it that we are the first ones in this regard. And the Minister of Finance changed his mind. I don't know why, but he then indicated that in so doing, and he indicated that in so doing, the Fireblade would have to pay a service fee. Now, that service fee was not finalized. It was not determined how it would operate, how it would be paid, whether it would go to the National Revenue Fund before it comes to the operation, to the operating departments, or how it would operate. That was not dealt with extensively. And that's why, at the present moment, it is paid only for immigration services and not other services, and that's partly the problem why it would be difficult to understand how we would operate it in relation to the other ports of entry should we concur to their operating, and then you would have Durban, King Shaka International Airport, Bramfisher International Airport, and so on. It would create a real logistical dilemma for us, because we would need to operate not only on the basis of existing capacity, but we would need to increase our capacity. The question is, if government increases its capacity in this form, what guides it? Because in terms of public service employment, public service regulations, do public service regulations apply to the immigration officers employed through this process? Who are they employed by? And under what legislation are they operating? I think we just need to cover ourselves in all of that before we can take any decision. But we really appreciate the overall overwhelming support of the committee and the determination of the committee to assist in dealing with this issue policy and legislative wise, so that there could be direction on our part. As soon as there is a Concord decision, we obviously would have to take the matter up with Cabinet so that Cabinet can provide clarity as to the policy direction we must take in relation to related matters. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Minister. And I think the issue of briefing by the Minister of Home Affairs and Director General on the privatization of the section of the O.R. Tambo International Airport to Fireblade has been addressed for now. And we shall be then looking at Parliament for support, and we shall try and be at the airports as well to see exactly what is at play, and we are very concerned as a committee that a key point is privatized, or some rich people try to privatize our national key points, and we all agree that that shouldn't be the case. And secondly, we are concerned that this issue may form a precedent for other players to demand from government the private use of ports of entry using government immigration officers and not paying for government services whilst government has no say on how they operate. And we note as well that state security declined. Now, countries that ignore what state security says and just continue and make decisions are not countries that are serious really in their national interest, because and then SARS declined. If SARS declined, which is our revenue collector, and they are concerned that perhaps revenue collection will be adversely affected, then who are we to say these people should continue? But that is up to court for now. But thank you very much to each and every member for constructive and honest engagement. Okay, no, in fact, there was a question. The question was asked by Honorable Hussein, thanks, Secretary, for reminding me, that who are the applicants at George and Cape Town? We are interested. If you've got the answer now, please.
Let's not mention names of the people and create another issues. But we said there were two applicants, and that's it. I think it's fair to them.
Okay, may I just ask?
Unless the DG is saying that if he's going to reveal the information, it's going to affect the pending court application, but he can't simply say, no, let's not get into that. He must explain why. Because we have a right to ask questions. His job is to answer it. And then he must just tell us if he can't answer it because it has an impact. Then we understand it. We appreciate it. But you can't just dismiss it and say, no, we don't go there.
I was referring it to the case. That's why I'm saying we've got this issue now which we are dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
Can we now just deal with the matter which we are dealing with? Then the other matter, not now. I don't want to get the names of the people on this issue which we have.
Okay, we are confined. We have confined ourselves to O.R. Tambo International Airport to Fireblade Aviation.
Chairperson, just 1 second. I mean, just on a point of order, Chair. This is not a matter that I introduced. This is a matter that the department introduced. So, I'm not raising this thing. He brought it here. And so I have every right to ask a question on the information that the DG puts before this committee. I have got every right to do that. And the DG must simply say why he cannot answer it. And let us understand it. I completely understand that I'm not unreasonable. If there's a good reason why he can't explain it, then he must tell us.
Chao given to G.
Earlier, Chair, we made a proposal that this matter does not only end here, meaning that the committee will have to take charge of having to understand this whole process, get our own, you know, advice and all of that. But what is very important is that this point that the colleague has raised there, it goes around the issue, if we put it rather than naming the people. It goes with the, what do you then do with the current application? That's the question that maybe the department will have to respond to. What do you do? We have this case here that somehow we're appealing it because we believe processes were not followed proper. But there are these applications that we now have. You know, what do you do with this application? That point, that's the point that is important, that the colleague is raising it, but we have to respond to it in a manner that sort of guarantees this committee that something is good. The next thing we're going to hear is that we have given them two. You know, I think it's important. Let's handle it in that fashion, DG. Just respond maybe at the level of here are the applications that we are now sitting with, and then therefore, what is your approach? You know, you may say, for now we are not processing them or whatever. Just say that so that this committee satisfies that we're not going to experience any of these things again. Because here we are forming partnership to fight. It's a struggle that we're going to fight with you. And we have to win this struggle together with you.
So, Chairperson, I answer questions which have been asked. So that question, if you ask what we are doing with those applications, that question was not asked, but I'm prepared to respond to it. We are not dealing with any application. As we are saying, this matter is still being appealed and all that. That's why Minister put it clear. There is no policy for a private port of entry in South Africa. We don't. But it's the court which took that decision. That one must be implemented at the moment. Hence, we are saying we are appealing the part of the law. So we cannot be now to deal with others until that matter is sorted out. But the question I was asked was the name of the people who applied.
Chair,
No, let us agree on time now.
Up to
what time? No, let us agree.
Are you hungry again?
No, let us agree on time. Let us agree on time. What time do we close?
1 o'clock. It won't take the DG a long time. It took him 1 year to write a letter to us. But it can give me an answer in 1 minute. I want to put this straight to the DG, and he doesn't want to answer, it's fine. I'll put a written reply if I have to. But I don't understand what is the secrecy of the department. That's why you are in the situation where you are. You know, they keep everything secret until all the dirt comes out in the public domain, then you don't get trusted. So these are the public representatives of the country. If somebody has made an application and you say you are not going to deal with it, then what's the harm in telling us who they are? I don't understand. But when you try and be secretive like this, it makes us believe that there's something sinister going on there. If there's nothing, why don't you just tell us, no, it's Mr. A and B who applied and we declined it. What's wrong with that?
Also,
Chair.
Yes.
I really sometimes don't understand why we want to make things very difficult. Because if the DG is afraid or is avoiding some this type of question to have an impact on the legal matter, he could just simply say so, let me not answer that question because of 1, 2, 3. I think let us remind one another what Honorable Chauke said here last week. He said this portfolio committee must be taken serious because there are things that are not going well because we are not taken serious as members of this portfolio committee. And it will start with a respect. Respect is number one. If we want to correct things that have been happening in this committee and we landed in such a situation. Because, Chair, to be honest with you, this committee is fire extinguishers. They deal with matters when it's too late. Issues of importance are not brought before this committee to be dealt with. Until it's late, until there's a court judgment, until we're embarrassed on the media, that's where we have to come and debate the matters here. And I want to reiterate what Honorable Chauke said last week. If we are very serious, we have to take ourselves very serious. And we must be respected as members of this portfolio committee. We are not here because we are bored. We've got nothing to do. We are here because we are members of parliament, guided by the rules of parliament, that we must be here and work. So that's why today the meeting was so polite, because we thought we understood each other now. After the previous chairperson have gone. So now we are going back to that, era of the old chairperson here. Because you as the chair, you must protect the members of the committee. So I'm appealing to you, Chair, please, this thing must not happen again. Things must be simplified and explained very, very simple to say that no, this is how it works. If you remember very well, even the IEC chairperson was telling us how to debate matters here. That's how the members of this portfolio committees are not taken serious. People, they come here and tell us as members how you must structure your debate. If you forgot, it must not be our problem. That is the IEC chair. Yeah. So chair, that thing must be the things of the past if we want to be united in this committee, and we must work as a united force. Unless that knows that was here during that time of that previous chairperson, we are going back to there. So I'm appealing to you because it looks like you are going to be acting for a long time. Take this matter to consideration.
You haven't seen the HEC. the Honorable Hussaini said that he'd be satisfied with a written submission.
No,
let us close.
You must give an answer why. And if he says that it's going to impact on the case, then you must say it on record.
Well,
you can't
okay. Let him respond.
Chair, it's the two applications that we are sitting with are those of Mr. Christoph Wiese here in Cape Town and Mr. Whitey Person in Georgia.
And you thought it was Kupchas?
No. I don't think anything. That's why I asked the question. But why you didn't want to answer in the first place doesn't make sense. Which means, Che, I'm sorry, Che, just one moment. I'm sorry, this is a serious matter. This is the thing I don't understand. The DG earlier, when I asked the question, refused to answer the question. You also tried to help him out there. I see that. But the minister gives us the answer. And his argument was that it was going to impact on the legal case. And that's nonsense, sir. Really.
Let us not choose language. Language that may lead to civil war in our country. Hello,
No, 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 Chair. I think let us close this meeting in a positive note, all of us.
Yes.
That we have received this wonderful input from the minister and will give support. It's clear that the richest of the rich in South Africa are giving up to occupy our port of entry. It's a struggle that we must fight. Is a struggle that we must win. I think that's how we must close the chair.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chauke. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Yes, I'm the chair.